You know, parents want balance. They want to see how well we can use AI as a tool and a resource to ensure our children are excelling academically. But they also want social balance, like time away from the screen and time away from devices, to make sure that, you know, there is a social, emotional, physical balance to how we operate in an advanced technological society.
Teachers cannot be the experts on back-end data privacy, right? There's people that should be vetting it, that should make it even stronger and more secure, and laws should follow that.
Parents and families are being innovative. They are thinking, and the role that NPU plays in all of that is making sure that school districts, school board members are building strong partnerships with parents and families and bringing them into the decision-making process.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the AMP to 11 podcast. We are honored today to be joined by Jason B. Allen, the National Director of Partnerships for the National Parents Union. Jason, how are you doing this lovely Monday?
Happy Monday, everyone, and also happy Women's History Month. And I'm doing excellent on today. I'm super excited to be a part of the podcast and this amazing conversation.
Joined, as always, by my amazing colleague and co-host, Rebecca Boltzmann. Rebecca, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I have 40 AI agents cooking in the background while we're recording this podcast, doing lots of interesting research and fact-finding and admin tasks for me. So I just get to be present and enjoy. I love that for me.
I love that for you too. And I love that for our listeners at home. If they're starting to dip their toe into agentic AI, you came to the right place. Jason, we would be honored if you could share with our listeners at home a little bit about who you are, the work you currently lead at the National Parents Union, and your passion and purpose. And we'll get to all the AI stuff after that. Let's learn about you as the person first, though.
Okay, awesome. So Jason B. Allen, I'm the National Director of Partnerships for the National Parents Union, which is the United Independent Voice of Modern American Families. We have over 2 million independent or individual members who are parents all over the country. And we also have 1,800 partners and affiliates that are within our partner network. I have the opportunity to engage and, you know, directly communicate with these stakeholders. Our initial intent is to create and implement positive policies that impact modern American families. We do this through our what now for this year in 2026 is called our Kids First Agenda, which is our policy agenda focusing on economic stability, education, health and safety, which are the most important areas of concern for parents and families. And AI crosses all of these four areas. So I'm excited to talk a little bit more about how we are engaging parents and families in those four areas through AI.
You're talking about, you have your eyes and ears on, you know, really the most trending topic, at least when we're speaking to parents out there. I'd love to hear your vantage point. What are some unique voices and insights that you're hearing out in the field? What's something that parents are saying that we might not be privy to if we weren't in your shoes? We'd love to hear just what are some of the things that they're most concerned about? And then we're definitely going to get to the positive too. What are they most hopeful about?
Okay, so on our website, nationalparentsunion.org, we have two different polls that we've done with parents and families across the nation around AI, collecting data on what is it that you know? What are your schools doing? What are some of your concerns? But what are some of the things that are working well? And so what's working well from modern American families around AI is the knowledge base of students as well as teachers. A lot of parents and families do have confidence in their teachers. Now, with that, they also are saying we're advocating for what our teachers are wanting, which is more training around AI, how it's advancing our way of living and, you know, the initial intent around education with AI for it to be a tool and a resource. Now, of course, there is some fear around AI. A lot of people you know, I love Rebecca mentioning how she has AI tools that are helping her with research. And, you know, a lot of the admin tasks, which I love that. I think school districts can actually utilize AI in some amazing ways to help teachers specifically with a lot of the admin tasks that they have to do throughout the day. Now, I also will say a huge fear of parents is that AI is going to replace Miss Betty, who is the school secretary at the front desk. And so this is my 21st year in education, and being a former school leader and district leader, I know that the way that schools operate, Miss Betty is still going to be needed for at least the next 20 years because schools, you know, need that one-on-one contact with someone who knows how to get the administrative things done and using AI as a tool and a resource. And so to close out this part of my comment, you know, parents want balance. They want to see how well we can use AI as a tool and a resource to ensure our children are excelling academically. But they also want social balance, like time away from the screen and time away from devices to make sure that, you know, there is a social, emotional, physical balance to how we operate in an advanced technological society.
Jason, your work with parents is fascinating to me because it's something I advocate for a lot too. When I go around the country and work with districts, I always add on a parent information night while I'm there. Because I don't know if this is what you're seeing, but what I'm seeing is we're having these conversations about students and teachers and training them to use AI, but that gap seems to be the families. They don't necessarily understand what AI is. A lot of them are maybe our age and not that we're old, but we didn't grow up with technology and digital literacy wasn't taught to us. So often it's a gap. And I just wonder if that's a gap that you're noticing. You're talking like this. Parents you talk to are very informed about AI and what their fears are, but I'm encountering a lot of parents who don't know anything about what's going on. Are you seeing that?
Yes, we are seeing that as well. You know, we have parents, and it's not just, you know, things that we are seeing and also feedback we receive from our partner networks. Parents across the spectrum, you have parents who rely on tutors that does, you know, all of the academic, you know, learning aspect of home for families. So mom and dad are able to manage other things while the tutor is driving the academic learning after school hours. And so you have very wealthy families. You have families that are working class. You have, you know, lower income families that are knowledgeable of AI and don't see how they're using it. But they also may rely on someone else who's driving that academic, you know, component of home life for them. So they're not actually engaged with tools, or they don't know the safety alarms, or they don't know the ins and outs of what AI actually is because they are reliant on someone else to lead it. I also will say in our rural communities and our lower income working class communities, it is still an access barrier. And so during the pandemic, there was a lot of conversations around the digital divide and those who were not able to even connect to broadband, Wi-Fi. And so how do you actually connect with the advancements in technology and AI or even to learn about it if you don't have access to the internet? So yes, what you're seeing is definitely something that at least 34% of modern American families are, I would say, experiencing firsthand. And it does include very little knowledge of AI, but even the access to learn about AI.
I just want to point out, and this is just familiar for me because this is something I've talked about recently, but it was a Common Sense Media survey that was done between students and parents. I'm sure you've seen it, but
yes.
I think most startling to me was like 70 to 84% of students that they surveyed had used generative AI, and only 16 to 20% of parents believed that their students had actually ever used generative AI. So there's this massive gap. And I wonder if you think that comes from again, either a lack of understanding of what it actually is, or maybe where kids are encountering it, because we know it's built into every social media platform now. And so a kid could just be chatting with their Snapchat AI or their Meta AI as an AI companion or friend, but parents might not even be aware of that. So I guess my question to you, as someone who's leading this work, is around, like, whose responsibility should this be to help everyone get on the same page, or at least get a common level of understanding and literacy so that we can start having meaningful conversations about what to do next?
So this is such a powerful question, because one major shout out to Common Sense Media. They are a partner of ours. We collaborated with them last year and the EdSafe AI Alliance on an AI advocacy toolkit for parents and families that addresses lots of the things that we're talking about during this conversation. To answer the question around who is responsible, one of the things that we teach our partners, our parent leaders, our caucus members, and organizers is that your elected school board members are ultimately responsible for not just the federal, but also the local and state education laws. And, you know, what these laws speak to is that there is a technology component. Integrating technology into the lives of the families that you are, you know, supporting. Now, we have some partners across the country who are doing a phenomenal job. San Diego, I have to shout out their school district. Okay, let me also say Phoenix, because if I don't name some people, I'll get in trouble. However, there are other school districts that we are working with who don't have a clear pathway to connecting parents and families to all of the things they need to know about AI. How are we utilizing the tools? What is generative AI, et cetera, so forth? We've come in and partnered with several school districts to do and also try to do workshops with parents to help them understand these things. Now, that's who is responsible. I want to give you this, and let's go here. What are the barriers to partnerships that are preventing parents and families from, quite frankly, continuing education at home? Then you have the battle between the technology departments and the family engagement departments, because the technology departments are all excited. You know, I'm a nerd. I love to read. I love to, like, really do a lot of research and be engaged in what is it that we're learning about so I know how I can truly be engaged. And so with AI, it's so much to learn and know. And we have seen a lot of the technology departments are excited. They are ready to go. They're like, okay, we need to have something for parents. We need them signed up tomorrow. And family engagement departments are like, yes, but we're the ones engaging parents and families. So we need to be in control of what this presentation looks like. And so the barrier comes in with ego. A lot of parents and families aren't getting what they need from their school districts because the battle between, is the family engagement department, are they leading this work? Or is it the technology department? And what we've told people is that it actually works best when both organizations or entities are working together to meet the needs of not just parents and families, but teachers also rely on both of these departments, again, to help continue education at home.
It's interesting because a lot of the, you know, conversations I have, I'm not sure how much technology department should even be involved with the parent facing things. And all of the groups that you're mentioning are under that school board and superintendent piece, ultimately, who should be coordinating that, correct?
You're right. And, you know, here's another tidbit that we tell parent leaders and parents. You can request a technology survey. So if you're saying in your survey that you're not getting connected to AI resources and tools, you're not familiar with AI, what does it actually mean? What is it? How is it showing up in the classroom? How is it being used in curriculum and instruction? Per that survey, which goes to whichever department is housed, you know, or, you know, asked to handle collecting that data, it ultimately does get to the superintendent and the school board. And so it is their responsibility to read through that data and say, wow, we have over 34%, or we have over 50%, or we have 78% of our families who are saying they don't understand AI. They're not connected to generative AI. They're not familiar with AI tools that we're using. we have a problem when we're using 30% of our budget around AI resources and tools for our teachers and students, and parents and students are saying they don't understand or they don't know what we're doing. So that's what we are training our parents to do and be able to understand the process of who's responsible and how it should look for their school district.
Do you assign any responsibility to the parents themselves or point them somewhere they can go if I don't know many parents who would request.
It's all of the responsibility is actually on the parents and caretakers. So we come in as a partner to support. One of the things our national president, Kerry, always says is that we don't parachute in. We come when we're called and we come as a resource. And so we make sure the parents, caretakers, families have what they need in order to get the best educational opportunities for their children. And so helping them to understand the policy, and again, this goes to the question of who is accountable. Your policy holders and your policy makers are your school board members who hire your superintendents, or maybe some people call them chancellors or executive directors, but they are under contract of the school board. And so if your school board says, we want all of our students to understand AI and we want our families and parents to be connected, then they are to hold that person accountable to doing that. And so that's a part of what we do to support parents in making sure that they're making those phone calls, sending maybe email correspondence, showing up to meetings, asking the teachers, hey, how are you being trained on AI and what can we do to continue this at home? Those are some of the tidbits and strategies that we provide to our network on how to get those things accomplished.
Yeah, I'd love to ask you, you know, you talk about a couple different ways to engage with parents. And similar to Rebecca, you know, the work we're doing, parents are at the center of it. We're finding great ways to engage with them. We're doing listening sessions. From the research you're doing, just from the practicality of ways you're engaging with parents, what do you find is the best entry point for people out there who are trying to engage their communities? Is it teaching people what AI is, right, in whatever facet you're going to do that? Is it teaching them, here's how your children are using AI at our school, and therefore here's tips on how to support them? Or is it something like, here are tools that you as an adult slash parent should be engaging with in order to, you know, further yourself, your own skills, your personal and professional lives, et cetera? What's your answer to something like that, or a roadmap you could provide to partners out there?
So what I would say to partners is the reality is all three of these things are needed. Now, from a district standpoint, you have families who fall in one of each of the three categories that you named. For teachers, I would say our standpoint would be the very last point, making sure that parents have the resources they need and the tools that they can use at home, again, to continue education at home. That's the teacher lens. I'm a certified teacher. I could tell you, especially a special educator, one of the things that we want is to get the tools into the hands of parents. Now, I would say from the standpoint of a school leader, maybe a policymaker, such as a school board member, the focus would be on how are we scaling the training and development? How are we making sure that parents actually know what AI is and how we're using it? So those first two things would be what those leaders will be looking to provide to parents and families. So I think that, again, to answer your question, all three areas are needed. And then it would be best to look at it from the lens of the teachers and what they're seeing the needs our parents and families are for those who are maybe a little bit closer to the students and their learning. And then also from a budget and professional development viewpoint from the administrative and policymaker side, looking at how they can ensure that parents and families are being engaged with how they're spending money on resources for AI, and also what it looks like in regards to the tools that their children are using.
We talk a lot here at the M211 podcast, and it sounds like you do as well, right? You're really focused on the individual, the children, their parents, right? You're trying to solve a national challenge, but at the end of the day, each of these parents really are, you know, hyper concerned about their own child and the outcomes they're going to get in the education system. So we often play a game here, the AI Effect. It's a nonprofit, the Rhythm Project, who has created this. And the main goal of it is, how do you strengthen human connection in the age of AI? So we often ask our guests to pick a topic, but there's one that actually I know is pretty relevant, and I would love to hear your vantage point on it, and Rebecca as well, but I'd love for you to start us off. Does that sound okay to you, Jason?
Totally. I love that.
All right. So here's the way it works. I'm going to give you a scenario. You are going to, while you can say it depends, and obviously there's going to be nuance, and please do so if needed, we'd love it if you could start with, I think it would support human connection, or I think it would erode human connection, and then just say because. Got it?
Okay.
All right. So a teacher uses AI tools to prepare for an upcoming difficult parent conversation. Does that support human connection, erode human connection, and whichever you choose, why?
I feel like it would support human connection because, you know, again, it gives the teacher more time to study those things to prepare for the in-person engagement. You know, I'm thinking about time management. I want to be able to prepare at being a teacher. What I would look at immediately is I have 30 minutes to prepare for this meeting. If the AI, you know, tools can save me 20 minutes that I can spend with engaging in resources to help me build better, you know, partnership and connection with the family and parent that I'm getting ready to meet with, then yes, that's what I definitely want. So I feel like, yes, it definitely is a resource and it would advance the connection in that way.
I think I feel exactly the same way. I have no notes on that. That's exactly kind of what I would have to say about them.
I also, you know, I also concur. So this wasn't the most, usually, but the diversity of thought is one of the best parts of it. But I think in this case, yeah, we're all very, very much aligned here. Well, and that's the case. Obviously, that was one from the parent's perspective viewpoint. Is it okay if we show you some of the other choices and maybe?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. All right. So here are some other choices that I'll just share on my screen briefly for you to check out. All right. So the Rhythm Project, the AI effect game. We are going to be playing this actually on National AI Literacy Day with people from around the world.
Awesome.
And they're going to get to chime in and talk about it. So any that strike your eye?
Creating an AI holographic version of yourself to attend a faraway family gathering and report back.
Is that even possible?
I was about to say, that's very interesting. I don't know how that
I saw Tupac at Coachella. Tupac was at Coachella, and I don't think that was really him.
You never know. There are a lot of rumors.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would say this would not help build stronger human connection because the whole point of a family gathering is like bringing us together and, you know, being connected and maybe not so much connected to technology. So I think that, you know, having a hologram, that's not the same as being present. You may be represented, but it's not the same as actually being present. So my response to that one.
Rebecca, would you like to go next or would you like me to go?
Yeah. Again, same as Jason. I don't even think that's possible right now. So I...
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. We've never had such alignment before. All right. And you can get the next one, Rebecca. And this time, ooh, I got a good one. We're going to play the counterclaim game. So this time you have to say the opposite side and defend it. Okay, Jason?
Okay. Opposite side of what I would
opposite think. Opposite side. Yes. To what your gut reaction is. Starting now. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Using AI to rate your physical appearance and offer tips to improve it.
What would anti-Jason say?
So, let me think. Using AI to rate your physical appearance and offer tips to improve it. I'll give what I would think last, but what would be the counter of what I would think is, you know, this is perfect to help me build self-confidence and, you know, allowing me to rate my own appearance as opposed to taking the thoughts of others that can be very overly critical and maybe negative and, you know, harmful to my emotional being. It can help prepare me for what others may say that could be mean and harmful to me. So that's my counter.
My counter would be similar, that you would using this might help. I'm thinking of young people, students, right? They might truly not have people in their lives who can help them, like think about some of like some personal grooming or hygiene that might lead to them being ostracized by their community. So therefore, this could be a great tool for people who just don't have that kind of guidance and support at home. So it might help them really just acclimate or assimilate when that is something that makes them feel self-conscious and they just don't have people at home that can help them with it. Jason, I wanted to offer this though as something, obviously this is a free tool and resource by the Rhythm Project, but one of the things I found in my travels when we talk about wisdom collection is many teachers and administrators like having these kind of conversations with students about like rules and policies and best practices. And they're like afraid sometimes to speak to parents, which is their words, not mine. And these kind of games or ways to show these things get parents immediately engaged because no one's an expert on AI, but everyone has opinions. And I just want to highlight, like, this is such a way to like lower the temperature, get everyone to engage. And then obviously you can capture that wisdom and it helps you build those, that nuance and kind of identify some of those gray areas out there. So might be okay, nice for
love some, that.
Yeah.
So what I will add to this part, you mentioned National AI Literacy Day, which is a major day of learning, celebration, and also teaching about AI. So of course, we will be having a national town hall for parents and families to be connected. And we also are sharing out a lot of cool resources, again, through the EdSafe AI Alliance and the National AI Literacy Day Advisory Board. So some of these things I feel like would be very befitting to ensure they're included in our newsletter that will be going out, not just on National AI Literacy Day, but also it will be available to our parents and families within our network. So saying all of that and sharing and hoping that we can connect the dots with parents and families to some of these cool resources. And I won't just say parents and families. You know, I'm also thinking about Community of Teachers, which is one of our phenomenal partners, and they are always doing icebreakers and trainings that, you know, again, can incorporate this magnificent tool we just used or this game resource that we just, you know, modeled for everyone. Also, I'm thinking about Healthier Generations that is a part of our socio-emotional coalition, and they do a lot of, you know, connections with AI and using tools of parents and families similar to this resource we just used. So lots of connections we can make, not just with parents and families, but also just across our network.
Absolutely. One thing I wanted to mention was when parents, it could be teachers, parents, students, you know, we sometimes have people who have very fixed mindsets around AI and other things that happen in school communities. So one of the things that we have found has been a really interesting way to get people to engage in this is we've learned two things that teachers have told us. One, bring students to these discussions when parents come because they will act much more civil if it's something that they feel strongly about when there are children there. I don't know if that bears in your opinion. The second thing though is by making people have to say a counterclaim, it forces them to at least acknowledge there's another perspective. And so that was something I've learned from doing this around the country. It just makes you have to acknowledge that there is a differing perspective and it's absolutely not yours, but you can at least figure out how someone could arrive at that viewpoint. So just wanted to—
That's really good.
Yeah, it really helps lower the temperature and at least shows like, yeah, we might not agree and we're not supposed to agree, but we can at least acknowledge there is another point of view to this that's not ours.
I'm going to turn it back a little bit more to the work that you're doing, Jason. I know that you recently launched an AI parent advocacy guide with some of your partners. Is that accurate, correct? When did that come out?
So we actually launched it we have a safety toolkit for the Kids Online Safety Act, and then we have one for AI. Both were launched last year, one on National AI Literacy Day, and then one in November for National Family Engagement Month. So it was a connector. We kept families engaged all year with focusing in on AI, advancing technology, safety for our children, and using these tools and resources. And we also have, you know, I mentioned this with school districts and what they can do, but we also have a presentation and a workshop series that we do with parents, families, school districts, and communities that really helps move the needle with what parents understand and know about AI and how they can be engaged with it.
So my question for you is, what is the single most important question that a parent should ask their school board today about how AI is being used in their classroom?
That's a great question. For specifically inside of the classroom, I think the number one priority of parents and families is, how are we keeping kids safe with these AI tools and specifically student privacy in classrooms and making sure that their information is not being leaked, which again, accountability-wise, school boards. Do we have regulations in place for, you know, companies that we are purchasing curriculum or licenses, or we're utilizing, you know, their tools? Have we done our due diligence? Have we made sure that they meet the needs of our students? Have we most importantly made sure that they're not second or third parties connected to them that will have access to our student needs or our student information?
Great questions. And I guess the final question for me has to do with this idea of the AI inflection point. I'd like you to talk a little bit, because I know this is something that you've talked about before, this idea of an AI inflection point and 2030 potentially. Is that something that you've talked about before? And is that something you have opinions on, what education might look like by 2030 and things we should be thinking?
I sit on a lot of different coalitions with AI, and I know that there's a lot of, you know, innovation that's happening with technology and also helping us to reimagine what education looks like. I think that there are really good models in other countries that connects to some of the other issues and concerns that parents and families have expressed. Climate change and, you know, energy efficiency. How are we making sure we're connecting the dots there with the need for more data centers and advanced, you know, technology outlets in our communities for connections to hospitals and, you know, homes as well as schools, which connects to, again, safety, health, education, and economic stability. So there's a conversation there around how AI is connecting to all of these areas. And, you know, again, parents and families want to be engaged in the process. They don't want to just be updated on what's happening to them. They want to be engaged in the decisions and the vision and the plans for the future.
Fantastic. And if you had to make a prediction of what this all looks like by 2030, what's your guess?
You know, by 2030, I think we will see some changes. I don't think that we will have like this dramatic jump. You know, what's needed? I think we're seeing more data centers. That's a huge conversation now. EarthDay.org is one of our partners. And for Earth Day, there are lots of parents and families, communities that are wanting conversations around, why are data centers needed? What are data centers? We're still trying to learn about AI. So what is the connection there? And it's all moving just a little bit fast. And I don't think it will be in a state of perfection by 2030. I think we'll still be exploring and kind of seeing like, oh, there may be something here with data centers. Maybe we should look at another route. Maybe we should look at, you know, how other countries are doing this well and what they've learned from in their expansion and growth around this. And that's what we're hearing from parents and families. That engagement, that type of thought process, and that type of inclusion of their concerns as well as their visions for the future.
You know, something interesting that you bring up about those conversations about Earth Day and data centers. It was a conversation I had recently with people who work in the environmental section who said this fundamental kind of disconnect around what data centers are and what they're for is confusing for people, because they've been told everything just lives in a cloud. And it sounds natural and it sounds like it doesn't require a physical space necessarily. And so that's what's sparking and causing confusion for people, because I think most of us early on were under the impression that it just kind of existed in without space or time and just kind of floated around like a cloud, and it's proving to not be the case. So thank you for your thoughts and ideas there.
We got two last things that we want to offer up to you, Jason, and to our audience, and then we're going to let you go continue the important work, especially here during National AI Literacy Week. One is, you know, a longstanding tradition here is we let you take over the reins of the show for a moment, and you get to ask us any question you have that you think might resonate with our audience or something that you'd love to know about the world of AI and education from our vantage point. You are now officially the host.
Awesome. Well, my first question to you all would be from maybe big tech and ed tech's perspective, what are they wanting to see? What are they envisioning for AI tools between, you know, right now, 2026 and 2030? Like what are they envisioning? What do they want to see?
Rebecca, let's do a bad cop, good cop. Why don't you tell us what you think, and then I will try to do appreciative inquiry following that. I will try.
Jason, something you need to know about me is I struggle with ed tech big time as an ethicist, right? At least the way that big tech operates in the United States. I don't love the idea of money being the amount of money that's being paid out of education to private companies that are then also benefiting from the data to build their systems, avoiding a lot of the legislation and responsibility that comes with a lot of that. So my answer might be a little more pessimistic, and I think there are wonderful ed tech companies who are doing things for the right reasons. Certainly, I think that there are many, many ed tech companies who are purely profit-driven, who are trying to get as much data as they can, share it with as many partners as possible to capitalize on that before any legislation comes in. And we need to do something to regulate that. So I'm not a huge fan of that kind of profit-motivated private sector being involved in public education, personally.
I actually, you know, I'm so fortunate. We just had Aaron Mote on our podcast and Rebecca. So, you know, it's between the two of them, folks like you, I get to listen and learn a lot. And on Saturday, I actually was part of a public hearing for the state of Connecticut on, they have three state laws that they're trying to pass. And I felt a lot more informed and equipped on what things they should look out for and ways they could potentially strengthen those bills because of listening and learning from folks like Rebecca. What I would say is if EdTech's getting it right, everything Rebecca said, plus a million, but what I hope they actually do is kind of what I'm sure your organization and many other really strong nonprofit organizations are trying to do, which is go show parents what you're doing before you try to sell it to a school and students and teachers, and make it more of a communal experience before it's driven just by profits and now you have to sell it and there's all this urgency. Like, develop it alongside the people who are going to be using it and who are going to be hopefully benefiting from it. So like when the actual user experience, the one thing I will say, right, if you make it safe and you make it as ethical as you can, then it really just comes down to like the impact. So for me, from a former classroom perspective, if you can truly personalize learning, right, use that data for good, keep it safe, but like you authentically can take what you know about that child, you have all the test scores somewhere, but like now talk to the tool and be like, you know, this child like really excels in this type of scenario. So it might help you build the lesson plan better. It might help you tailor that resource that's right in front of them to their lived experience. So that's, if they get it right, that's what I hope's happening in education.
And I am still waiting for data to prove that that is going to be effective at all. I'm hoping it arrives at some point. You know, technology and
I would agree.
Data to back that up.
I also would say, and I know we're at the closing, so I'm curious to just, and I'm going to go on a limb and put this out here from what I've heard from those in our network. It would be cool if public school districts could reorganize their technology fairs to not so much of the students are presenting on this is what we have learned through our, you know, technology department, but, you know, maybe this is something that is like 5 in the evening on a Saturday from 5 to 8 is the technology fair where families, parents, caretakers are able to come out with their kids to their school's technology fair and actually meet with the prospective contractors of the school or the school district for the parents to actually kind of go through, similar to how we do school choice, you know, go through a lottery at their school, you know, give a ranking of these are the tools that we saw that we think will work best for our kids. And this is why I'm saying this, because when I've had conversations with our partners and we have parents that are learning around their school budgets and how their school budgets are organized, when we look at waste and what school districts have wasted things on, even your teacher unions and your teacher organization, advocate organizations will say the school districts waste so much money on curriculums and resources and books that they don't use because it doesn't work for children. And so in our minds, we're like, well, why don't we solve that problem? Why don't we allow the parents and the children to say, hey, I'm struggling with dyscalculia, for example, and I need more support with math. I just saw 3 tools that I think will work great for me that my school isn't offering me. So if the children are saying, that interests me, I feel like this will work for me, this has already been approved and vetted by the teachers, why would we not try to adopt a process like that? So I'm throwing that out here on the podcast for those who may be outside of our sphere that can influence school districts and, you know, policymakers to consider setting things up like that. I feel like that would be a better way for companies and organizations to also get connected to schools and school districts. And it's a true engagement. It's not just, oh, we received the bottom line and, you know, we're going around our way. We now can really tell if our product is serving children and families well, because we know based off of parents and families actually choosing or having the opportunity to choose our product.
I'm going to give that a solid yes and, because I think that we'd have to worry about a power imbalance there, because these salespeople are smooth and the parents and students don't necessarily know, even the school procurement officers or superintendents do not know the right questions to ask to ensure the tools are safe and compliant and they're not going to misuse student data or manipulate kids or are pedagogically sound. And so I think yes and, we spend time training and educating parents and students on what's important, what matters, what questions to ask, and then letting them have some firsthand experience doing that.
I know we can't get into the nuts and bolts of this, but this is a really cool idea, because we actually thought about teachers being the buffer between that. Because to your point, Rebecca, we know that sometimes school leaders and school board members are far removed from the classroom. So who better to vet the tools to say, hey, this actually fits our curriculum. Hey, this actually will work for children than our teachers. And now I'll even will say this. We also thought about, well, you know, again, this is what we do. I'm excited about this because we're training parents and families to do these processes. Now getting them to think, school board members are going to ask, well, how does this meet our budget? Well, if you want your product to be adopted by a school district, then you should provide a stipend to teachers to vet your product to make sure that when it's, you know, that way we know teachers are already trained, right? Because the school districts already trained them in these things. We know that the companies want to get in front of families and parents to see if it works. It really is a win-win. Now, this may be bringing me back and we talk more about this on the next podcast. But yeah, these are things that we are exploring in our technology coalition. I lead the education caucus for our network, and the education caucus, when we think about putting kids first, how do we meet the needs of our teachers, our educators, those who are providing, for example, AI tools and resources, but also everyone else who plays a role in these things. And this is how we're thinking. So parents and families are being innovative. They are thinking, and the role that NPU plays in all of that is making sure that school districts, school board members are building strong partnerships with parents and families and bringing them into the decision-making process.
Yeah. I think 2 things you said I just want to highlight as we close up this amazing episode with you, Jason B. Allen. One is, you're talking about seats at the table. And so like to Rebecca's point, teachers cannot be the experts on back-end data privacy, right? There's people that should be vetting it, that should make it even stronger and more secure, and laws should follow that. But like, you're talking about the user experience, and ultimately you're talking about parents who, their tax dollars are what are funding ultimately these experiments. So getting more people to be part of the purchasing decision-making process with guidance and support. Another thing that I'm hearing a couple places that I would love to keep, you know, tell parents, this is definitely they're allowed to do, performance-based contracts. So meaning, we need this level of adoption. We need this level of satisfaction. We need to see this type of improvement in whatever metric the solution should be doing. Otherwise, there's no renewal. Like, make them show you that it's working. And I promise you, I've seen in both sides, right? We see this in public ed when, you know, there's a bar that's got to be reached. People sometimes reach it. You know, they're more incentivized and they're more motivated. And in private industry, that's the same thing. So you're allowed to do that. You're definitely allowed to raise the stakes on them. Don't settle for what they're offering you in the first go around. Well, Jason, we know we got to get you out of here. So if you don't mind, can you let our listeners know a little bit more about where they can find you, where they can learn more about the important work you're leading, and any other organizations you want to highlight in your final minutes here?
Awesome. You can reach the National Parents Union on all social media outlets. Now, we're very famous on TikTok, influencers for parents and families. But I also will say our website is where everyone can get all of our information, especially our polling data. We run the longest standing parent poll that is directly connected to parents, caretakers, and families across the country, as well as the territories of the United States. That is where you can get all of our resources and our information. I also will give my email address in case you want to ask, how do we become a partner of NPU, or how can NPU support us in what we're doing to organize or bring parents and families together to ensure that policies are putting kids first? My email is jason@npunion.org. That's N as in national, P as in parents, union.org.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much again, Jason, for everything you do and everything you lead. AMP211 listeners, we hope you follow Jason, you follow this amazing work they're doing at the National Parents Union, and you join and be part of this coalition to change education for the families that are out there supporting our students nationwide. Thank you again, Jason. Thank you, Rebecca, always for pushing the envelope on what we're discussing here on the AMP211 podcast. And to our listeners, have a wonderful day. Thank you all.